welcome. You are listening to Dr. Vibe, and I am one of the co-hosts of the weekly podcast for the request to present for President Obama to create a White House Council on Boys and Men. And tonight, our special guest is Michael Gurian, and Michael is one of the main proponents of this proposal. And I'd like to share a little bit of Michael with you before we get to the main part of the show tonight. Actually, you know what? I'm going to let Glenn do this. So, like I love to do on these shows, we're going to hand it over to one of our three panelists. Actually, Glenn Barker and also Dr. Marvin Thompson. Go ahead, gentlemen.
Thank you. And thank you, listeners, for wanting to be informed and educated along these lines. Yes, tonight we are addressing the creation of a White House Council on Boys and Men. And each week we bring you experts and people of influence in the fields of five of the major components of this crisis. One, education. Our sons are dropping out at an alarming rate. Emotional health. One factor alone, this suicide rate is five times that of our girls by the ages 20 to 24 years of age. The fatherlessness rate in our country has climbed. It is over a third of our homes now, and in some communities, more. The physical health. I have yet to hear of one powerful entity in our government that is looking at men's health issues for the sake of a national view. And our jobs. Our young men are not being prepared for the jobs that are coming in the future. So this is what this proposal is going to draft in and present to our president. And tonight, we have Mr. Michael Gurian, actually one of the architects of the document itself and an author of 28 books, best-selling. Please join us. Are you there with us? And let me ask you, Michael, why is this topic you're going to bring up about boys need to learn different than girls? Why is that of national concern? Michael.
Well, and I want to thank everyone for having me. Thank you so much. There's sort of two things there. In terms of the council proposal that we wrote to create a White House Council on Boys and Men, from my point of view, and I guess folks know that what I've been saying for years is that nearly every social problem in our era intersects with the state of boyhood in America. So that's as close as I get to a soundbite. I really think we've gotten to that point. The school to prison pipeline, simply the prisons, how many we have in prison, and this is a boy problem and a man problem. It's not only a racial problem. There are more white males in prison than males of color, and there are a disproportionate number of males of color. So it's male, it's boys and men, and I think that's the thing that we're going to have to push through as a culture. We have to work together at the grassroots to try to help the politicians understand this is not a specialized small issue for a certain group that gets identified. This is a boys and men issue, and one of the parts of it. So the Gurian Institute, the organization that I founded and I work with, the Gurian Institute has specifically been addressing it in the schools. That's one of our program areas, the Boys and Girls Learn Differently program. And to give one example of how across the board this problem is, the teachers, 99.99% of teachers who come out of our academic schools of education have never seen a PET scan or a SPECT scan of the male and the female brain. So they don't know how differently these brains learn. And they go into schools, beloved people, and they create classrooms in the best way they know how based on getting their master's in education, but they get into those classrooms, and 70% of the D's and F's in the U.S. and a similar number in Canada are males. So the males are clearly not doing very well. Some males are doing great, but a lot of them are not doing very well. And this is an across-the-board problem. Our academic world, our politicians, we just have to wake up to it.
So this seems to be a national call to action. And then why would you say, before we go into the specifics about your field, why is this being ignored?
Well, it's being ignored for a number of reasons. I mean, some are philosophical, some are visceral and natural. the natural part of it, the visceral part of it, is that we will always and always have, as human beings, we will always put girls and women first. We will always make sure to take care of girls and women first. And I don't believe that will ever change. I think that's just visceral and natural. So that's something that most folks did by nature in the far past, and then it became became a little bit twisted, you know, where females became subjugated. So 50, 60 years ago, starting 100 years ago, thankfully, we had a feminist movement that said, okay, no more of that. We need to put girls and women first in this other way, you know, which is full empowerment. So that was a great thing. Now what we have is girls and women are being put first as they ought to be, but we can't meet their needs anymore unless we deal with what boys and men face, because there's just too much mutual dependency. So, you know, billions of dollars are being spent on programs for girls and women and almost nothing on programs for boys and men. And we can't sustain that as a culture, but we still have that visceral programming in us. And also, I'd say, you know, there's some radicalization of the movement that all of us devoted ourselves to. I'll say this from my personal opinion. I'm a devoted feminist and devoted myself to this movement. I'm almost 60 now, so for a long time. But in the last 10 to 15 years, you know, that's become so radicalized that it is almost impossible to have any kind of dialogue at the highest levels about what boys and men are facing. So I think most of it's visceral and natural, and some of it is the politics are really getting in the way.
Dr. Vibe, I think I'll pull the panel in here early. Right there, there was a lot of juice in that that I think our panel could and certainly could address. Dr. Vibe, you've been entrenched in the men of color community for many, many years. What do you agree with? What do you disagree with here?
Well, thank you, Michael, for sharing some great introspective on that. And I agree that, and especially how you emphasize, Michael, about the issue of politics, how the political system is not reacting flatly. They're just not reacting. And it's great that you're one of the main proponents behind this initiative, because where I live, it's the same sort of thing. There are many people that are screaming for the help of men and boys, and there's no comeback. Why do you feel the politicians are not responding to this critical issue?
Well, I think the far right and the far left are at war, and they just pick the things they want to war about. I mean, I just think we have to all wake up at a grassroots level and say to these folks, you know, this is just too much playground fighting. There's just too much at stake. And because the extremes control the dialogue, we can't deal with the issues that our people face. So for that's just my personal opinion, you know, from and even this proposal. I mean, the way that this proposal has over the last 5 years, the lack of traction, whereas in the grassroots, I spend a lot of my life in the grassroots because we have an organization that travels around the world and trains. And in the grassroots, everyone's moved on, right? I mean, everyone knows that boys and men are in just as much trouble as girls and women, and in some areas far more. And the grassroots knows that. Every mother of a son knows that, you know. Every wife, you know, just about every wife. I should never use the word every, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, that's just that in the grassroots where I live, we're all there. But in those back rooms and in the battle that the politicians are having, it's very hard for them to see what's going on. And I think the latest example, I've been getting so much mail over the last 3 months or 4 months from my readers and colleagues about the rape crisis, you know, the rape culture in college. That is a perfect example of the politicization of this whole thing, where, you know, where the facts are from the Department of Justice that 6 out of 1,000 college women are sexually assaulted, but we were told that 200 out of 1,000 were sexually assaulted. And as one mother wrote me, she said, okay, so when the politicians tell us that 200 out of 1,000 college women are raped, that means that 200 out of 1,000 of our sons are rapists. That's from the mouth of a mom of a son who's in college, who's so angry about that kind of stuff. But, you know, I'm powerless. I can't do anything about that. That stuff moves through the system, and then, you know, males are once again rapists and terrible people, and females are, you know, being victimized. And that's what happens politically. But the grassroots becomes very angry about that.
So we've drifted into gender politics and the way, and I think it's appropriate because it's one of the major factors. How does this get into a clean space in our government to address these things right in the eyeball and to say that let's not pretend these things don't exist? Could you address this? The way I understand it, the Whisper campaign is Mr. Running for office, you disenfranchise the women by talking about men. You're toast.
What? Okay, now I didn't end up. What was the question?
The question is, do you believe that there is a you just don't talk about men's issues because the women's issues are on the forefront?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Better not speak it.
Yeah, the thing is, yeah, what happens is the, again, we have a difference. We have a bifurcation in the culture between the grassroots and ordinary people raising families, you know, which is most or all of us, and what the media tends to do or what the politicians tend to do. In the grassroots, I don't think there is a problem unless you're in a venue that obviously is anti-male. But in the grassroots, so many people have woken up. I mean, if politicians talk to mothers who have sons and mention this issue, they'll get their votes because those mothers of those sons are so angry about how little help boys are getting in the U.S. And I want to also – I have to ask you guys, but I travel in Canada. I hear the same thing there. So I think at the grassroots – they could speak the truth and say, look, both males and females struggle, you know, and we've got to help both. And you know, fathers of daughters like me, I have two daughters, fathers of daughters like me and my wife, mother of two daughters, would go, yeah, yeah, both, males and females both have trouble. We're there with that. But the media and the politicians, and I'm generalizing, are bifurcated and distant from what's going on in the grassroots. So I think that there's that sense that, oh my gosh, we've got to push women's issues or we'll lose the women's vote. And they don't realize that women are more complex than a particular issue. And I do think in the US that we just saw that. I mean, I think that the Democrats ran a lot on their particular take on women's issues and lost. And so I will say who I am. I happen to be a Democrat, and I've voted for Obama both times. But as I watched that happen, being an advocate for both boys and girls, our programming is for both boys and girls, and also having spent a lot of my life on the boy issues and the men's issues, I watched that, and my wife watched that, and we both looked at each other and said, ooh, they're limiting women and girls' issues to these incendiary things like rape culture, and they are going to lose. And they did lose. So I hope this awakens people on both sides of the aisle that you have to have a deeper dialogue about gender than males are raping women, you know, and girls aren't in STEM, and those two things are really bad, and then nothing else really matters. We're going to have a deeper dialogue. And it's not a dialogue that will take anything away from the fact that violence against women is abhorrent and no one wants it and we'll all fight it. And it'll take nothing away from the fact that all of us, including my own organization, work in the area of girls and STEM. It won't take away from those things to be more honest.
And that is why we need a council on men and boys to start addressing these issues from the men's perspective and post-haste. Dr. Thompson, you've lived in this world of how policies affect families. I'm sure you have got many notes here. Dr. Thompson, join in this conversation.
I do. And Michael, you made an interesting point in your last comments. I think what I'm hearing you share is that we're moving into an evolution of a discussion about gender equity and not the isolated viewpoint, and broadening it more to a definitive outcome. Because as I'm listening to you, and these are things I agree with you in some of the observations, this issue of gender equity has been politicized, and the viewpoints, although we share the outcomes of those, I don't think that the discussions and the approaches have been collectively steered towards that collective outcome. And I think this opportunity to have a mirror council of the boys and men council actually gives us an opportunity to really discuss what that growth of gender equity outcomes and what that equity is going to be and what it should look like. And I think it's a perfect forum to bring in some of the issues you brought up regarding the rape culture. And that starts early. That's not an indictment of anything other than some of the behaviors that emerge out of that are cultural, and there are some norms that are borderline that grow into some of those behaviors. And I think those are opportunities also that this council could address. So I agree with you. I love the idea of seeing this thing really examine what has been and what will be. And I don't think having this dialogue in isolation is beneficial to anyone. I think this is a great opportunity to address not only the learning issues that we see and the gaps that we see, but also some of those social behaviors. And you mentioned grassroots, which is so important because real changes really begin at that level. And when they're understood at that level, they're more likely to take root.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and I agree with you about gender equity. We have to get to the point where gender equity is really about gender. That is to say both genders and obviously the whole gender spectrum. It has to be about that now because the needs of girls and women are still, as they always have been in the past and always will be, are interconnected to the needs and abilities of boys and men. And that will never change. So we cannot be looking at women's issues or girls' issues in isolation. I totally get why 50 years ago, and all of us were involved in it, why we had to put forth a theory, you know, in which girls and women's lives were looked at independently. And I think we all get that. We had to respond to the patriarchy. But now it's 2015, and now we need new theory. And this is obviously, as you guys know, a lot of my devotion has been in creating new theory to move forward. And so my theory is science-based. And so as a philosopher, and all my books are science-based. And what I'm arguing is that when we really look at the science, and I'm talking about hard science, you know, neurobiology, neuropsychology, neuroanthropology, the hard sciences where we can really look at PET scans, SPECT scans, biochemistry, and then so basically look at nature, nurture, and culture holistically, not isolate one element, but look at nature, nurture, and culture holistically. So that's that Gurian science-based theory. And when we use that theory, the applications that we develop are fully gender partnership oriented. They're fully gender equity oriented. So, for example, when we go in a school and we train that school and their big need is males, you know, they call the Gurian Institute and they say, our big need is the boys are all failing. What are we going to do? So we go in and we train all the teachers in all of this, show them the brain scans, show them how to change the way they teach to meet the needs of both boys and girls. So their main need there was the boys, but when we look at their test scores a year later, we see that the girls' test scores went up too. And that's, you know, that's partnership. And that happens, I believe, now in 2015. I believe everyone should start inculcating more of a science base so we can get out of these very myopic frames that we get into when we battle about gender, which is that, oh, it's just this group or it's just this group. You know, everything's fine for the other guys. The science base allows us, you know, science-based theory allows us to take the best of the far past, take the best of feminism, but to move forward with a talent set, with a whole base of research that actually didn't exist 50 years ago and certainly didn't exist 2,000 years ago. And that's the science base. So that's where I'm hoping to be helping people to create new theory so that they can sustain full gender equity and full gender partnership.
So you're saying that you have now scientifically proven, which has been kind of known by common sense for many, 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 many years. So this is a wonderful breakthrough, and that's the baseline for your work. So when you speak of systems change, though, and a complex system analysis for boys needs to be developed, is this what you're speaking of?
I am. Yeah, what I'm asking for is, and what we utilize, what my team and I utilize, is complex systems analysis. So as opposed to single system or single theory analysis, and when, you know, I'll give an example of a single theory analysis. Girls fail in STEM because of gender stereotypes and stereotype threat. okay, that's a single theory, right? All it does is look at a cultural aspect of STEM. It does not look at nature, nurture, and culture together, which would be complex systems theory. Got to look at nature, nurture, and culture together and then develop applications that use all three. So that's just an example. Or boys struggle in literacy because they are told that it's not cool to read. Okay, that's a single theory. It only uses a culture-based idea. There really is no proof of it, but I think it's an acceptable idea that from a culture point of view, there are some cultures and subcultures that tell boys that reading is for dorks. Fair enough. But we cannot get change in male literacy rates, which, as you guys know, are just terrible, you know, in comparison to girls. We're not going to get that change by just saying that and keep saying that one thing, because that's too small. We have to address nature, nurture, and culture all together. So that's complex systems analysis, and that's what we do. And then we're asking for systemic change. And the way we've accomplished that is, for instance, in an organization, when everyone in the organization gets trained in this complex systems theory for gender, you know, then they really innovate differently at a deep level, because their own visceral understanding of males and females shifts. And so then the whole system, the whole sort of culture of that workplace, the culture of that school or corporation or agency shifts to be able to look into the eyes of males, look into the eyes of females, and see what's really going on inside there. And I don't believe that can happen. I think we've proven actually in the last 30 to 40 years where we use these single theory ideas and we push them. You know, we just push them and push them and push them. And we don't see the systemic change we want because they're just too thin.
So if there's a dual track now that you're proposing, let's get very practical, and I want Dr. Thompson in this part of the conversation. So then you're talking actually a dual track. There's a track for young men, and there's a track for women. And this could speak to separate gender schools. How is our system supposed to support this? And first, Dr. Thompson, you've seen this in effect. Please speak to this.
Are you speaking to the gender separate schools? Is that what you're
gender
referring
separate
to?
Schools, right, and a teacher that's got
Glenn,
to wear two hats.
Glenn, I'm gonna interrupt you there. I'm not a single sex schools only person, so no, that's not what I'm saying.
Okay.
Most
good.
Of our work is in co-ed schools.
So our teachers, as they stand, would need to be able to adopt and know about these two modalities.
Right. That's what they need,
the
and they can work in co-ed or single sex.
Right. And a lot of the stuff. Go ahead. That Michael is speaking to has some strong implications to inform teaching practices and instructional design. So, you know, one of the inherent observations that we're all aware of are that boys and girls have different learning styles, and I think Michael did a very good job of outlining some of the just genetic and inherent differences of boys. Boys are more spatially oriented. And I think the myth that boys don't like to read is also a myth. What boys will typically do is read the things that are of their interest, one, and are information. Boys' goals in reading are to do something with the things that they read. So if they're reading prose poetry, for example, you're probably, you know, going to lose them. That's not what their natural inclination is. But if there's an intermixing of the types of reading, informational, things that they can extract from, things that they can apply. And boys typically read to do, and that's just the active part of boys. Girls are typically multitaskers. They're very good at multitasking. And I think the myth that girls are not spatially oriented is, and I think, Michael, this speaks to your multifaceted approach to looking at the issues, that it's not that they're not spatially oriented. It's the fact that they are great multitaskers. So as a teacher or an instructor, you know, those variables have to be taken into account when lesson designs or lesson plans are put in place and activities. Boys are more active, we know that. But that activity can be displaced through various ways of creating really hyperactive thought. And if they can take that thought through reading and other activities to some type of tactile activity, that's where boys thrive best. And when they're set in an environment where they're just they're what we would consider passive learners, the traditional model that we use in our country today, that's where boys fall. And we start seeing behaviors and start seeing them acting out. And, you know, that's that cultural phenomenon of boys will be boys that lands them, in many cases, on the outside of achieving what they could be. So I think there's, you know, this
right.
this council and looking at some of the issues and data that we're talking about gives us a great opportunity not just to address them and understand them, but to get them down to the level where they actually have some practical application.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. There are so many modalities that can work for both boys and girls in schools, and what we found. So we've trained in more than 2,000 schools, more than 60,000 teachers. So we have a large database, and what we found is the single common denominator for the educational world is the training, because these teachers are already very smart, you know, brilliant, great people, and they want the best for these boys and girls, but they did not get this training. They have not seen these brain scans. They were not told this unless they used Boys and Girls Learn Differently or some other resource as a supplemental text. They did not get this stuff. So they didn't set up for all these other modalities, and they don't read the signals, especially of males. They don't read their signals and these behavioral signals, which are very often signals of this system is not working. It's a broken system. That's a lot of what they're
right.
doing with their behavioral issues, but they're read obviously as discipline problems, and they're not read as healthy critique of the educational system. So we work obviously in a lot of co-ed schools, we work in a lot of turnaround schools, a lot of high poverty schools. We work in single sex schools. They're using single sex. They're doing awesome things. Montessori. In other words, there are all these great ways to educate, and single sex is certainly one of them. Co-ed will always be the norm. These are all great ways to educate. But if the teachers can't, you know, if they're not trained in this, then the system is awry, and the females will tend to, for a number of reasons, including the multitasking. The only area where there is one area where males do outperform females in multitasking, and that's spatial multitasking. But in all the other multitasking areas, especially in adolescence between 10 and 16, there are a number of brain pruning and brain elements that make it so that, you know, males are about 3 or 4 years behind in that organizational kind of multitasking. So as if we go forward with this and we don't address this in all the modalities, no matter how kids are taught, if we don't address it, we'll have more and more males failing, and they're failing because we haven't trained the people who are supposed to give them care and compassion. We just haven't trained them well enough, and we haven't given them the holistic approach to these guys. And a council, you know, to your point about the council, that's been obviously our dream for all these years that we've been doing it and in creating the proposal, that we would call attention to this, not just in all the work we're all doing individually, but that the White House would do so as well. And I think that if the White House will do it, they'll find, or Congress, whoever ends up doing it, they're going to find that most people will just say, wow, this was common sense. Why didn't we do this before?
Yeah. Right.
Someone stood up for
Michael.
Did,
you know,
did the right thing.
Could you speak to, and as I'm listening to you, there's a lot of implications. I talk to a lot of parents who have questions about, you know, their child's behavior and performance in school, and it's amazing to me what little tidbits they get of information that they, you know, they have these aha moments where they're going, you know what, if I had known that, I would have tried this at home instead of this. I mean, can you speak to some of the implications of what the outcomes of this council could be and the impact and implications for families?
Yeah, absolutely. For instance, wherever we go, you know, I do 20 to 30 talks a year in different communities, and almost always I am asked to give an evening keynote to parents or an evening talk to parents if I'm in a school during the day. And so the conversation that we have together is one in which the parents are hungry for theory and strategies, and they're hungry for the schools to get the same theory and strategies so that everyone's on the same page. So some of what happens is that, for instance, we'll be teaching the teachers during the day the same thing we're teaching parents at night, and I'll give an example. Both parents and teachers have difficulty getting boys to write in three categories girls write performing boys. One is the number of words they use, two is the sensorial detail they use, and three is the emotive detail they use. So females tend to get, you know, better grades on English papers, history papers, social studies, et cetera, because they're using more words, they're using more sensorial detail and more emotive detail. And what our research showed back in the late 90s or mid to late 90s, our research showed that if the parents and the teachers had the boys who are having trouble in this area to draw storyboards before they wrote, so take a half hour or 40 minutes to draw a little comic book or a storyboard of what you're going to write in this paper. When they do that, then the grades go up. So their grades go from D to B or C to A because they now write with more words, more sensorial detail and more emotive detail, because the male and female brain are set up very differently. The right side of the male brain does not have any verbals on it. There's no word production on the right side. Males are doing spatials and visuals on the right side. Females are doing words on both sides, and they're connecting words on both sides of the brain to the sensorial and emotive centers in the midbrain. But males are only doing that connectivity on the one part of the left side. So when all that we say to the guy is, hey, son, you got to do your homework. You're supposed to write this paper. You're supposed to write a 500-word paper on blank. That's a verbal cue, and a lot of these boys are pre-verbal, or those verbal cues don't stimulate enough of their brains. But when they draw, when we say to them, so the parents will say, just like the teachers will say, okay, draw a storyboard of your, you know, your trip to Toronto this last weekend. That's what I want you to write your paper about, so draw a storyboard of it. So they draw that storyboard. And that, then they look at the storyboard while they're writing. And what that does is stimulate the right side. But the right side was dormant in the boy when all he was told to do was verbally to do something. Now, because it's visual and visual spatial, his whole brain lights up. And we can see that on scans. So we show these scans to parents and we show these scans to teachers. And, you know, it just alters the way they teach. They just go, oh, my gosh, that's common sense. Why didn't I think of that? And right. It just so happens that we brought that research out about 20 years ago.
Then do you think that men, yes, boys should be maybe traded on another kind of curve?
No, I think I don't just think. I know, just based on our database and our research, I know that if – the teachers are trained in this, they teach both boys and girls quite well. So we don't need a separate – I mean, I like separate sex schools, by the way, for a lot of reasons, and feel free to ask me about that specifically because do a lot of our contracts in those schools. So I like them, but I'm saying that any modality this can work, what our research shows is it's about the teacher training. And it's the same, by the way, for counselors, for therapists, for all – I'm a marriage and family therapist – for all of us in the therapy field – we find that when the therapists are trained in how to work with the male brain, that the boys and the men stay in therapy longer, and boys and men leave therapy to a great extent because the therapists are not trained in how to work with them, and they sort of think, well, you know, both males and females can talk. But males are not going to talk at the same rate females will, because the brain is not formatted to sit in the chair for 50 minutes and talk. So one out of five males are our estimates based on our research who are able to sit still, you know, look at the therapist and talk for 50 minutes. That's about one out of five. But four out of five are going to need movement. They're going to need stress balls. They're going to need visuals. They're going to need other ways, brain breaks and other ways of stimulating the brain so that they can get out the deep trauma. And so this is not just for schools. We're talking across the board. This kind of stuff works, and, you know, and girls are not harmed by it and are helped by it. At the same time, the issues that most caregivers have are with boys, and so it, you know, totally alters the landscape once these boys start performing well. You know, it just all gets way better for the girls and women as well.
Terrific. I'd like to send this switch a little bit now, unless you have a question. Does one of the panel have a question for Michael?
Go ahead,
Dr. Bob.
No, I just, and I don't know if this is appropriate time to ask this, but what does the impact of the large disparity of female teachers in classrooms teaching young boys have in this whole conversation of boys and being educated? Because the large predominantly number of teachers, not only in your country, but in my country, in the primary ages, are women. And how does that affect... Does any of your studies look at that effect or that reality?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. The baseline thing I want to say, and then I'll flesh it out, is that our data shows two things that are parallel lines simultaneously. One, that female teachers, female therapists, moms, you know, the women you're talking about, when they're trained, when they get it, you know, they alter what they're doing and have a profound and positive impact on these boys. So our research does not show that you have to have 50% males and 50% females or something like that. And part of why it doesn't show that, I don't think, is because it will not happen. You know, K through 6 or pre-K through 6, we're never going to get 50% male teachers. I want us to get 10% more at least. I believe that's realistic. But you know, it's going to be very hard pre-K through 6 to get 50% male teachers. So I'm very glad that our research shows that women, once, you know, they're trained and go through these intensive and get trained, that they alter the way they teach and they fix a lot of the problems that they're facing now. So that's one parallel line. The second parallel line, however, is that we do have to get more males involved, you know, elder males, adult males, male teachers, male counselors, et cetera. We do have to get these males involved, and especially when the kids are 9, 10, 11, and then forward, because the brain biology shifts in puberty, and so does the internal psychology shift. And so while females through the lifespan do incredible things for boys, this is not an either or, but they need the help, especially puberty and beyond, of the elder males. They need that help. And if they don't get that help, obviously, as I know you all know, the school to pipeline, prison pipeline, you know, increases, because the males at puberty and through adolescence who don't have the fathering, don't have the male mentoring, don't have the male teachers, male coaches, et cetera, the males that don't get that are more likely to go to prison and to just fail to launch and fail to succeed and be loving, wise, and successful guys. So it's two parallel lines. The women are doing great things and can be enhanced, and yes, we need to bring more men in.
Dr. Vibe, you see this across the continents as well?
Absolutely.
The same kind of,
yeah.
You do?
Yes, I do. It's prevalent here, Toronto, England, Japan, in many different countries around the world. So it's, as I always say when we're on our show together, it's not just a U.S. thing.
Right.
So we're going to make a shift here, men. We're going to say, on a personal note here, Michael, so how was your life as a boy and a man impacted by your work with boys and men? What really lit your fire?
Well, yeah, I think I'm asked this a lot, and you know, every time I answer it, I feel like some little other memory comes through, you know, so it's like an evolving answer. I mean, I've been 30 years doing it, so it's just sort of evolves daily. But what got me there initially was my life as a boy, and it was very, very complex life. And there was a lot of physical abuse, there was sexual abuse, a lot of tragedy, a lot of difficulty. And I have one of the reasons I got so into studying the genome and genetics and the brain is that there were other people, other boys who had the same sorts of trauma that I had, who didn't turn out as well. And I have always wondered about that. So, you know, the resilience gene, MOAA, all these genetic things interest me because we all were brought up in the same trauma, and I turned out the way I turned out, others turned out differently. So that got me initially back in the 80s, back in college and grad school, got me into trying to figure out why. The second thing that got me into it was that my parents were academics and then foreign service, so we moved around the world a lot. And I could see everywhere I was that the boys were playing with boys in the same way that they were playing in the last country I was in, and girls were playing the way they were playing in the last country I was in. So the culture didn't matter. So it was clear to me that there were some transcultural elements that must be coming in chromosomally, and now we know they come in on the X and the Y chromosomes. When I was coming through, you know, it was all culture. Culture socializes us for gender. But, you know, I was suspicious of that in college and grad school and really devoted myself to trying to figure out the nature base of it so we could sort of be more holistic. But it was my personal experiences playing with other boys in India or playing with other boys in Laramie, Wyoming or Honolulu, Hawaii. No matter the culture, we're playing the same way. So those were initially what got me in, you know, the sort of personal life trauma and then the curiosity. Then as I developed the theory and worked with clients, I'm a therapist, you know, worked in schools, became a philosopher. I mean, it's expanding every day because I'm learning every conversation I have with parents, with people like you. I mean, every conversation I have, I am learning more and more. So I'm, you know, the 30 years of doing it have keep altering and evolving me.
And so, man, we are right on time, and we're doing a wonderful job carrying such a rare topics. So let's do this. We've touched on this, but now we do know there's also a political realm, and let's not pretend it doesn't exist. So why do we say that we need to address this from a political perspective, and what is that perspective in your perspective, Michael?
Yeah, we have to keep doing what we're doing in the grassroots. I mean, we should never stop that, and we will. We're called passionately to that. But in terms of the politics, what we're going to have to do is convince politicians that we need to fund. It's really a funding issue. I'll give a for instance. When I was doing some work with Department of Justice, someone back then, whose name I won't mention, an executive, when I said to him, why is there so much funding for programs for girls and women, which he and I both were fathers of daughters, so we were very glad of that, but why isn't there any program, why isn't there any funding for boys and men? And he said, well, I know what you're saying, but we fund boys and men through prison budgets. And so, you know, that was like really eye-opening. This is about 10 years ago, and since then, I've tried to see it through his lens. So I've watched it, the whole funding thing, through that lens. And sure enough, an irony in this area is this wonderful thing that President Obama did and his team did, you know, with the My Brother's Keeper to help boys of color. So it's a wonderful thing. But that's funded by him going out to corporations and asking the corporations to give money, which fortunately these corporations and foundations have done. He was not politically able to get the government, right, to give money. But when the, you know, Council on Women and Girls was formed, which I think we're all glad it was formed, when it was formed, it was funded. But we can't, not only can we not get a council on boys and men, but when he does do something, which is great, like My Brother's Keeper, he can't get the funding inside the government. He's got to go out because the politics are so difficult for him. So, you know, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to say to these folks, look, you got to take these handcuffs off our politicians and off our leaders. You've got to allow them to fund these programs that are proven, you know, like these are proven programs like the ones we do, you know, they're proven and they should be done a lot. And so should a lot of other wonderful proven programs, but they're going to have to get funded. And if they're not funded, then people are not putting their money where their mouth is. And I would say for me, that's going to be the tipping point. When I see these things funded for boys and men, I will go, okay, you know, we did our job. But right now they're not funded, so we're way, way behind. And, of course, as we said before, we can't solve the problems girls and women face until we fund this programming for boys and men, because the boys and men will keep acting out trying to get us to fund these things, trying to get us to help them. They'll keep acting out and send us this signal, and we won't read it right. We'll read it as you're bad, you're defective, go to prison. And, you know, and there'll be more women are getting hit. There'll be more domestic violence. There'll be more pain for girls. There'll be less success for girls because we are interconnected.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Thompson, do you agree with this, what Michael's saying as well? You've seen it from a pragmatic now for generations. Please speak to that issue.
Well, I think the first thing that resonated with me was the need to to move away from the partisan politics of it. And I agree with you, Michael, money is going to be an issue. But I think one of the things that just resonates with me is that I think that there's still a mindset that boys are okay. And I think that's part of the cultural norm of boys will be boys when we look at the level of violence and the level of crime and dysfunction amongst our boys. And to give you an example, when I first shared with a friend that we were doing this show, and his first question to me was, why are we having a council on boys and men? What's that all about? So when I explained it to him, his response to me was, well, why don't we just get them into sports? Well, that just reinforced to me that mindset and culture of boys are okay and there's one way to cure the problem. And we know that boys are just as complicated as girls are. And I think this issue of boys, girls is a social issue. And Michael alluded to that when we started, when he was sharing about the need for fathers, males in their lives, whether it's in the classroom, at home, mentors, we have all of that. But those aren't solutions. Those are reactions to a condition. And I think there's an opportunity to take what we have, bring it to the table, to not react to it, but to set a new course. Because unless we set a new course, as Michael just alluded to, we're always going to be paying. We're always going to have to raise funds to solve the same problem. And we all know it's a growing problem. And if we keep on this path, the pendulum has begun to swing. The question is, how far will we allow it to swing before we get back to center, before the problem isn't as big as it is? Philadelphia is just closing, 23 schools in Philadelphia to put up a new prison. If that's not a sign of where things are, we're now having a discussion. A city is having and taking action on the thing that stops crime to put something in place to react to what hasn't been acted on. Until we get to that point, we're just going to keep throwing bad, good money at a bad problem. And this is a great opportunity, and it has nothing to spend it now, pay later. That's where it comes down to. And the question is, what are you paying for? That's the bigger question. Not because I had to pay it, but when I finish, what are we walking away with this time? 23 schools for a new prison? Unacceptable.
Right. Mm. Yeah, so, amen. Well, amen. You've said it beautifully. Amen.
And we're going to start wrapping up this section, which is just perfect for this. So, Michael, you can briefly say male violence, right, and working with the feminist groups. Please address those two things with the White House Council on Men and Boys. Really look right in the eyeball of male violence and work along with the feminists and the women's groups.
Yeah, this is, these are crucial topics in terms of male, and they're interconnected, of course. The issue of male violence, it's emblematic of everything we've been saying today, I think. And I'm going to start with a personal story. So my wife, Gail, is a therapist, and she's also a certified rape crisis counselor, so works the phone lines and then also goes to the hospital with rape victims, female rape victims, et cetera. So this is something that really moved me. In her process of doing all of this over the years, she is often comes home and says, oh my gosh, these terrible things that are happening to these women that in many cases are obviously perpetrated by these men. It's driven her, she says, to want more help for the men. So while obviously doing all the things to help the victim, someone like her, who's, again, grassroots, doing it constantly, is saying, we got to figure out how to get folks to look at the guys. And of course, so this brings up the second issue, which is in terms of working with feminists. So male violence is a place where there's a lot of feminist theory, and there's a lot of good feminist thinking, absolutely. It's also a place where a lot of that theory is single systems or single theory oriented. And she, Gail and I have talked about this quite a bit, because a lot of the, like DV, domestic violence work, that the theory there is, it's a very strong feminist theory that males are perpetrating violence on females, that's the way it is, and that males are doing it for power and because they're trying to hold on to, a patriarchal privilege, et cetera, and for a number of other reasons. And the victim is the victim, the perpetrator is the perpetrator. And in many cases, you've got to do that because it's absolutely true. However, it's too simple. And we're going to have to work with and build bridges with feminist groups and feminist theorists to see more deeply into both the male psyche and the female psyche and the couple and what's going on with that couple and how it got to that point that someone hit the other person, because it got to that point, it evolved to that point over a period of months and years. And the for instance, the rape crisis system, it does not spend much time trying to figure out why that guy did what he did. Until we figure out why that guy did what he did and how she got her in that position, we are not going to solve the terrible amount of domestic violence we have. So what we're going to have to do is beg our feminist colleagues to expand theory, to add science base to it, to go deeper into what's going on in males, and to uplift the whole cultural dialogue with us to see males and females as both a part of every system, including a violent system. And that, of course, won't stop us from putting that man in jail because he abused her. So that's not the point. Obviously, he's going to get punished. But if we want to prevent it, punishing him does not solve the problem. So we will, I believe, in terms of dealing with male violence, we will have to expand our theory beyond that sort of simple idea that the reason males become violent is because of macho stereotypes in which they're trying to hold on to power and privilege. My 25 years in the field shows me that that's too thin.
Thank you. And we're moving to our last section, men, and that's going to be closing up with comments. And what I want to know is, Michael, what is it you want our listeners to do?
Well, you know, I rather than give a laundry list, because, you know, all of us, we like, oh, please do all these things. I'm going to pick out two things. I'm going to pick out three things. The first thing is, please, you know, connect with your congressperson. Try to connect with the White House. Please jump into the fray, at least with some emails and with some calls to these people to say we really do need a White House Council on Boys and Men, we need a Congressional Council on Boys and Men, and we need a political shift. So please do that, and you might burn out, you might just think you're hitting your head against a wall, but please do it, because if millions of people do it from the grassroots and communicate with our leaders, things will change. And then number two is have Helping Boys Thrive summits in your community. And if people want more info on this, you can go to helpingboysthrive.org. We've developed with a number of partners this program, these one-day summits that can be brought to every single community, every community stakeholders come together to do this, and it just expands consciousness. Hundreds of people come to these, and then it just fans out, and it's they're obviously about helping boys thrive. So that would be number two. Number three, try, if you're having trouble with your boy in school, so if you're a parent or a grandparent, or if you're a teacher who's having some difficulty with boys, look at getting the training for both the parents and the teachers, because that will take away a lot of the trouble you're having. It will end a lot of the trouble you're having. So look at getting that training for the teachers and the parents, rather than saying there are no solutions, because there really are solutions. So this is a way for the grassroots at all levels to work together while we also reach out to our leaders.
Great. And contact information directly to get a hold of you is what, Michael?
Oh, well, my website is michaelgurian.com. The Gurian Institute website is gurianinstitute.com, and my name is Gurian, gurianinstitute.com.
Very, very good. And Dr. Thompson, would you please give your closing comments about this topic? The need for it on that you and the Lighthouse Foundation that you founded is addressing this on a 360 method, and how would our folks get a hold of you?
Well, my last comments are right in line with Michael's. I think this is a grassroots issue, and I would encourage our listeners, particularly if you're parents of boys, to think about your needs and what would have or what would benefit you from an outcome of a council's examination of boys' needs. And encouraging you, just as Michael did, to write to your congressman and not only include what, write because you would see a benefit to it, but if you have ideas or suggestions on what the council's focus should be as you look around your neighborhood, because ultimately this council should impact the communities themselves. It shouldn't benefit or serve the council's unique purpose, but it should impact communities. You can reach me at drteducates.com and on Twitter, at Dr. T Educates.
Wonderful. And Dr. Vibe, hosting international shows nearly every day of the week now. Would you give them your information so that we can get and stay in touch with you?
Well, my parting comments or parting shots. First of all, I'd like to thank Michael for sharing with us his wealth of knowledge and experience, and also by taking the initiative with others in regards to the White House Council on Boys and Men. A few quick things. I think first things first, anyone who's listening, I think first things first, start at the grassroots in your own family. then started the grassroots in your own community, and then started writing people, whether it's a local politician, provincial, whatever politician, and they don't even need to be in power. Write people, make people aware of the importance of this issue, because if there is not an investment now, the expense that we have to pay later on may be so great that we may regret not taking the investment now. We don't want to live a life saying, I woulda, I coulda, I shoulda made an impact. Every person counts in this initiative. So if you want to get in touch with me, you can go to my website, thedrvibeshow.com, thedrvibeshow.com. Also on Twitter, at drvibeshow. Thank you.
How wonderful. And for me, the listeners, I ask you to consider that a great idea, its time has come. And let us do like the men here say, and let us be proactive. Let us not wait till it's such an epidemic that will take us generations to unfurl from. So in the areas of education, emotional health, fatherlessness, physical health, jobs, the future of our young men, the promise of putting the head on the body, the big tent for all of this is the White House Council on Boys and Men. Something that will go on as a brand forever, long after we've left this planet. So I want to thank you. And if you want to get a hold of me, I am Glenn Barker at 312-243-6743. You can reach me on the web at mkpchicago.org. MKPChicago is on Twitter, and Glenn Barker is on Facebook. Thank you all for listening. See you next time.